Hello and welcome to another episode of Django Chat. Today we're going to talk about versioning in Django. 2.2 just came out, which is a long-term support release. So we're going to dive into what that means and how to understand versions in Django. Hi, Carlton. How are you doing?
I'm doing very well.
So you are the Django fellow. You are, as much as anyone, responsible for the releases of Django, right?
Yes, it falls upon me. So one of the key points about the fellow program is that we handle the releases. So we do those monthly normally. And yeah, that's a key role.
Can you talk just briefly about the levels of involvement, right? The core Django and developers, people who can do commits, and how that all kind of comes together for a major release like 2.2?
Okay, well, so most of the commits now are done by the fellows, which up until recently was Tim Graham. He's just stepped down, and now it's myself and Marius who do the who are the current Django fellows. And
you mean approving what gets in?
Well, yeah, but also anybody can help approve. So, you know, if you want to come and review a pull request, then please do. There's a patch review checklist, and that would be amazing if you want to come in. We'll talk in another episode about contributing more to
Django.
Yes,
we will.
But then once all the commits are in, Maris and I are responsible for rolling the release and putting it up on PyPI and making it available to you.
Got it. So let's talk about 2.2. This comes after 2.1, and
yes.
3.0 is coming out later this year in December. Can you talk a little bit about what makes something a major release, and then we can talk about, you know, why the switch to starting with 3.0 and 3.1 and all the rest of it?
Okay, so each version of Django has a period of 9 months where it's in mainstream support, and so 2.2 is now the current version, and we've just finished with 2.1, and before that 2.0, and then before that 1.11. And the major versions between 1.something, 2.something, 3.something is there'll be a long-term support for each major version. And that, so as well, beyond the initial 9 months where a version gets is in mainstream support, it also gets another 9 months of extended support where it gets security fixes and any data loss bugs get backported. The long-term support release gets a whole like 18 a whole another 2 years, I think, or however long.
Right. Well, within that, so 2.1, which we're just coming off of, so 2.1 came out, and then there'll be, you know, periodically 2.1, 0.1, 0.2. These
yes.
are the smaller, what's the technical term? Those are generally security updates, right?
Well, okay, so when the new version comes out, for the first 9 months, it's in mainstream support, and it will basically get a release every month, unless there are no changes, but there will be changes. And at that point, it gets bug fixes. Any bug fixes that come in within that first mm-hmm. 9 months get included in the current version, whichever is the current version. That's what mainstream support means.
Right. So April 2.2.0, and then probably in May, there'll be 2.2.1, which will be the bug fixes that have come up.
Yes,
and
exactly.
That process will continue for the
roughly nine months. Yeah, and then once that version reaches the end of mainstream support, it goes into extended support, and that after that, there will only be a release if there's a security issue or if there's a data loss bug.
And this gets into long-term support releases, right?
Yeah, right. So the long-term support releases last for the whole, like basically four releases. It's the whole of the 2.0 cycle. 2.2 will be there until 4.0, basically.
Right. In the same way that 1.11 was the previous long-term support release.
Yeah.
So 1.11 has continued to be updated for 2.0, 2.1.
Yeah, 2. And I think that's got another 9 months to go even now.
Yeah.
Right?
So,
and
yeah.
And the key point is that the long-term support, they're not getting bug fixes. They're only getting, once they're outside of mainstream support, they're just like all the other versions. They get 9 months of the latest bug fixes getting put in. But then they'll only get a backport of another fix if it's a data loss bug or a security bug. And they give a bit more stability. If you're running an application where you can't guarantee that you'll be able to keep up with the latest version, then they give you the stability and the security to know that for the whole life of that major series, your version will be supported. 2.2 will be current all the way through till the next long-term support at the end of the 3.0 series, or the 3.x series. So you can stay on that for 2 years or 3 years.
Which I think a lot of companies do to...
Yeah.
And yet, we've discussed this, you know, privately. It's worthwhile to stay up to date, not just stay on the long-term support release, but to, so, you know, we've talked about, you know, what are the highlights for the reasoning for that, right? Because the company is sitting there saying, this takes time, I don't have time.
Okay, so back in the day, maybe, updating between Django versions was a serious thing. There were quite a lot of breaking changes and it was difficult to update. These days, we're much more conservative. And this is one of the great things about Django, is it being, because it's a mature framework, people sometimes think that means it's boring. No, that means it's really exciting. Why?
Yeah, that means it won't break on you.
It won't break on you. So we are really careful about not introducing breaking changes. And if we do, they're well documented and they're small and there's a deprecation policy. And what does that mean? It means that if we're going to get rid of a feature, it won't be got rid of immediately. It will be in the version which, so say we introduce a deprecation now in 2.2, it will be pending deprecation in 2.2. It will be deprecated in 3.0, and it will only be removed in...
Right, and you know, we're going to link to this in the notes. There is a way to run Python and see these deprecation warnings before it fully breaks. I mean, because this is a point, you know, there's a lot of people are still on Django 1.5, and so if 2.2 comes out, certainly I've done this before, you know, you say, oh, okay, I'll just update to 2.2 and fix everything that's broken. But as you have educated me, that is decidedly not the way to do it.
Well,
because
be
if you go, you know, 1.6 with flags and correct things, then 1.7, right? This is the recommended way to...
Yeah, I mean, to get up, to get all the way from 1.5, you've got to dedicate some time. But let's say you're on 1.11.
Yeah, okay? 1.11. That's more real.
You're on a supported version. If you're not on a supported version, well, okay, there's time. But the general policy is the same. It's just going to take you longer. So from 1.11, run with the deprecation warnings enabled. So a pending deprecation warning won't show by default. So you have to run it with this W flag. You can either run it with D for deprecations or to get all.
So this would be like run. So Python manage.py run server.
Yeah. Okay. So instead of running manage.py run server, you have to run Python with the W flag. So WD for deprecations, and then manage.py run server. So you have to invoke Python.
And again,
explicitly.
we'll link to that so people can see that. But
then it will then show the deprecation warnings. And so the version that you're on, run it with the warning flags enabled. Then fix those deprecation warnings, then upgrade not from 1.11 to 2.2, but 1.11, so in theory, right? In theory, you can upgrade from one LTS support to the next LTS support without having to go on all the hoops. That's the idea behind them. But whether or not you can,
Practically speaking, you're better off to go.
You're better off to go to the next minor version. So 2.0, fine. Run again with the warning flags enabled, fix any warnings. 2.1, same again, 2.2.
Yeah, I think these deprecation warning flags are a very underutilized feature.
Right, and the key point is, if you do this, and this is where Django is so exciting, that if you could do this process, once every 9 months, you can allocate a day or whatever to installing the new version, turning on the flags, making sure it's all fixed, installing the new versions, grab a coffee, read the release notes, because there are copious release notes.
Yeah, which we'll also link to for every version. Yep.
Right, and they give you all the breaking changes and, you know, and the upgrade process is actually these days very smooth.
Yeah, it's a lot smoother than it was. And also, you know, of course you have tests in your project, right? So you can run your tests.
And if you've got, if you've got CI, then even if you haven't got CI, if you've just got unit tests, they're brilliant. You can create a clone of your virtual environment. You can install the latest version. You can even install Django Master from GitHub. And then you can run the test suite and see what's breaking. And if things are breaking before a release comes out, so we've just released 2.2, but there's an alpha release, there's a beta release, there's a release candidate. If you can install those beforehand, and run your test suite and let us know what's breaking, then we will fix those breakages before the release.
This is really important for the community to do the pre-release versions.
Yeah, especially if you've got CI, there's no reason why not. Use Tox, create an environment that installs the development version or the release candidate version. Run your test, let us know if something broke that wasn't meant to.
Yeah, and we're going to do a whole separate episode on testing and continuous integration and, you know, Tox. There's a whole number of other services, but... The takeaway is you should have this.
Yeah,
but we'll cover how you can do it. I mean, this is something I'm spending quite a bit of time in my new book, Django for Professionals, talking about how to do this, because it's not always well documented. But you know, if you're thinking about joining a company or a project and they do not have a continuous integration testing, that's a big, big warning flag. It just is crazy once you know a little bit about Django and web frameworks not to be using one.
Or anything. Like, it's not just Django. It's it's everything. Like, untested code is broken by design is the quote, right?
But, you know, for the beginner, intermediate developers or people who've done solo projects, we're mentioning this for you.
Yeah, I mean,
but you will see it. You will see it, and you will see crazy things in the real world.
But for me, you've got to test the code somehow, right? So you can either open up your browser and load up the page and click through manually, in which case every time you come to test it, you've got to go through those manual steps. Or you can take the time to write a unit test of some kind, you know, be it using a browser driving
like Selenium or something,
framework like Selenium or something like that, or just a unit test in pure Python code. But if you take that time, then you can run that test automatically every time you make a code change, rather than having to do it manually. So you've got to test it either way, so you might as well.
Yeah, and you have to test it for yourself on a project once you get beyond a very basic stage. And then when you're on a team, you absolutely have to, you will just go crazy without the tests.
Yeah, and when you're writing code as well, I mean, people talk about test-driven development. You know, some test driving is great, but for me, very often, I don't know how a code is going to behave.
I'm the same way.
So one way of working out how it's going to behave is to write a unit test, and then, you know, you can even put a breakpoint in the unit test, and you can say, this is the state at that point.
Right. I don't think it's helpful. Well, there's a whole bunch of talks on this. I mean, David Hennemeyer Hansen, I think, is the most public in being against, you know, extreme test-driven development. I think the key is whatever works for you. Sometimes I'll do the test first. Probably generally speaking, I write the test immediately after, but it sort of doesn't really matter. The tricky thing is when you're learning Django is it's hard to write a test when you have no idea what you're doing. So yeah. I think especially, you know, formal test-driven development where you write the test first, that presupposes you know where you're going. And so, you know, if someone's a beginner or an intermediate, I would not worry about having trouble doing test-driven development, because it's just something that I think it's more of an expert level thing. When you're beginner intermediate, it's much more appropriate to write the test after you've gotten the code working, I would say.
Yeah. And like, yeah.
But you'll hear different things, but I guess don't beat yourself up about it. I mean, I have trouble doing TDD. My brain just doesn't quite work like that. On occasions, as you mentioned, sometimes writing the test will help me think about the problem. But, you know, I think people who are really into test-driven development talk about it, and people who just do normal tests don't talk about it as much. So there's a little bit of an imbalance there.
Yeah, I think so. What would I say? I'd say even if you're a beginner, use the Django test client, right? And just write a test for the happy case. I hit the URL and it loaded.
Happy path programming, yep.
Yeah, but like it loaded and it gave me a 200 response, and in the response was, you know, hello world, whatever you put in your HTML page. And what that gives you then is at least a regression test. So you can run that.
Yeah, something.
And if something broke, then that won't work anymore.
Yeah. Well, and since we're talking about tests, just at least for me, I typically will start with, do I get a 200 response? Check the template. Am I using the correct template? If the template has homepage in it, I'll test something that's in the template that should be there. Then you can test the views. So you can go through, you can test the templates, test the views, the URLs, test the models. It's helpful. Yeah. We'll do a whole thing on it.
Yeah, and say you added, I don't know, a method to your model, a property to your model that calculates something. Well, just write a test for that. Did it work? Well, there's two ways of checking did it work. You can open up the shell and call it by hand, or you can write a test that does the same thing.
Actually a little bit lazier. It's lazier to write the test because rather than having to keep manually doing it.
Yeah, exactly.
So, all right. Well, let's move on slightly though. So Django 3.0. So that's coming out. So this year there's two major releases. 3.0 comes out in December, and maybe if you can talk about, so what's different in 3.0 and then timing, right? I mean, because the big news is it's async.
Whoa.
But as we've discussed, you know, a new release is coming out in December either way, and then the question is, you know, how much async does it have, because there'll be 3.1 and 3.2.
The big thing in the Python web framework world is async IO, and can we use bring that into Django for us? So that's on the horizon. And yeah, hopefully some of that will get done this year. And if we can, then that will be in 3.0. But 3.0 is a time-based release. It's not feature-based. So
yeah, the time-based thing is key.
There is a release. There was a release in April. There will be a release in December. There will be one next September as well, like 3.1. Mm-hmm. And so on. You know, that's the cycle of releases that we're on. And what's in it is just what's completed at that time. So hopefully, for me, I'd love it if there was async functionality at the view layer at least, maybe at the ORM layer. You know, even it doesn't have to be complete. But if there was some, then that would be great. But we'll see. The key point for me is that 3.0 isn't going to be a breaking change. It's going to be just a continuation of Django that we know and love, 2.1, 2.2, 3.0. It could have been called 2.3. Like, there's no going to be breaking changes. We're not going to mean that you can't upgrade without serious work. It's still going to be that grab a coffee, read the release notes, run with the warnings,
so why
fix
not,
the warnings, install the new package.
So why not call it 2.3? What was, I guess, and this speaks to the question of, so who decides, right? Who, if you can speak to, so who says we're going to go to 3.0 and it's going to be in December? Because there is a roadmap, but how does that roadmap get developed?
So the idea was that there would be a LTS, a long-term support release, at the end of each major version, and there would, and then we would bump the major version for each LTS. So the 2.2 is the last 2.x release, and that's the long-term support until, I guess, 3.2. You know, I don't know what the roadmap looks at the end of 3.0, but the release before
it goes up to 3.2 as the long-term
So there you are. So there's three releases and then the LTS, right? And so 4.0 will just be the release after the next LTS.
Oh, okay.
Right, and that was the idea, was to number it that way. But there's no...
But who's deciding this? Can you just talk about the governance of Django? Like, I mean, you are the Django fellow, but who do you work for? Who do you answer to?
Well, this was... I'm contracted by the Django Software Foundation, who are the custodians of Django, and, you know, they do all the fundraising.
So that's the non-profit in charge of...
Exactly. But this, the people who govern Django are the people on Django Developers. The Django Developers mailing list is the place where Django is governed. And there historically has been a thing called Django Core, which was the people who contributed, they'd be invited to Django Core. But that is in the process of being dissolved and will be dissolved this year. And that will be replaced by governance amongst the wider community. A lot of the Django Core members are retired, that, you know, they're not really active in Django anymore. And yet it makes it look as if there's 50 of them. Well, there's not. There's half a dozen people really that maintain the regularly.
And there's also, I know, efforts to have that group reflect the community, which is pretty global at this point.
Yeah. And, you know, it's a lot of Americans, a lot of Europeans, a lot of men. And Django is a much more diverse community than that, and it wasn't represented in Django Core, which is populated by people who have given a lot in the past to Django, but a lot of them have moved on or aren't active now. And so there's a feeling that Django Core is not representative. So that will be phased out. And then the management of Django will really occur on the mailing list amongst anybody can join that, and anybody can contribute and offer their opinion and, you know, join in the discussion. And then ultimately beyond that, the Django Software Foundation, the board of the Django Software Foundation, will have a supervisory role. You know, they would be the court of last appeal, I would guess, or however you phrase it.
Yeah. Well, this is, actually, we'll link to your talk from DjangoCon US in the fall, where, what was the title of that again?
Your framework needs you.
Right. Where one of the points you made, and I think you showed the graph of the fact that it's really half a dozen people who do the overwhelming majority of work, and then there's a very long tail, right?
Yeah. And
so it seems like, you know, millions of people use Django. It's this amorphous thing, and yet it's yourself and a small handful of other people who really make it happen, and basically largely unpaid, too.
So there's...
you're paid.
The fellows. Contracted. But other than that, it's volunteer work. But, you know, there are a few major contributors that, that if you quiz them directly, well, it's part of their work, you know.
Right. Well, yeah, right. Yeah. Well, because that's the other thing of, you know, who are these Django Core people? It is a mix of of individuals at larger companies, and then quite a lot of consultants actually, or individual contractors.
Yeah, because people are using Django, and they want it to work well, and they want it to work for them, and they built their business around it.
Right. It's... And in some ways, I guess that's the dichotomy, is if you're on a major, you know, say you're at a huge company, you're getting paid by your employer to dive in and solve this particular issue that will generate the community. Whereas if you're a consultant and you're building a dozen new Django sites, in some ways you're more apt to be able to try out and use the new features and, put them in practice more so than a more established site.
Yeah. I mean, big installations, they have trouble keeping up with what, you know, I say, oh, it's just a day to update. Well, yeah, kind of like if you've got some giant thing, then maybe it is.
Right. I've seen here in Boston, the Django Boston meetup, people who are, you know, very experienced developers on huge projects, and they literally haven't started a new Django project in years, in a production sort of setting. So there's, no one can do everything. So much to do.
No, I mean, I still think that you're buying, like the analogy I always use is you're buying a car, not an ornament, right? And if the amount of maintenance...
When you use Django.
When you build any piece of software.
Oh,
right. Okay. And like a car, it needs maintenance. You can't just put it on the shelf and look at it. If things will break, and there will be security issues, and there will be operating system updates that require you to install the latest versions of libraries to keep running, bit rot. It really happens. And if you don't maintain your car breaks down. And if you don't maintain your web application will break down. And it really is a small amount of time that you have to allocate each month, each 9 months, each major release. Mm-hmm. Allocate that time, upgrade your application. And then not only does your car keep running, does your web application keep running, but you can benefit from all the new features. And
it will save you time. I mean, it will help you hire, because you and I have both worked as consultants. If I see a code, I just had this very recently, a 1.5 code base, and I go, I don't want to fight with that.
No, it makes you weak.
if I have a choice.
Yeah.
I mean, I think what's more common is you'll have a code base that's old, but has at some point customized and gone off of Django.
Yeah.
I just had a conversation before we recorded this with someone. He's on 1.5. They had developers who built something custom, and now they don't know how to keep up.
Yeah.
That's probably a little more of why companies are resistant and get so far behind, is because you have that custom features and
it's difficult to allocate the time. It's like, you know, there's always a backlog of features, there's always a backlog of bugs, there's always unrealistic deadlines being set, and the maintenance just doesn't get done. It's technical debt. Yeah. That's the story of software, right?
But if you are a somewhat technical manager and you are trying to hire, just for hiring alone, update Django. Update. I mean, I was just at it last week. We're going to do an interview with a company that's big, growing company, and they are on the latest release of Django, and they allocate the time, and they're trying to hire 30 engineers this year, and they're going to have a lot easier time saying, you know, we are up to date.
Yeah, no, entirely.
Than saying we're on whatever version because we don't have the time to do it.
Yeah, so. And it tells you something. It tells you something. If you I don't want to upset anyone, but it does tell you something about the company if they can't.
It's a cleanliness test of the
maintain the product. Technical debt is real, and if it's not managed, it comes out of hand, and you end up in a position where your day to day work is not enjoyable because you're polishing this thing.
Your lemon of a car instead of a brand new, maintained.
You're driving a car which is leaking oil over the road.
Right. Okay, well, I think we've covered is there anything else we want to cover on the major points of Django versions? Because this is something that we wanted to do for a long time.
Yeah, like, you know, the LTS is important, and it plays an important role, and there are some companies for which it's appropriate. But in general, I would say you should default to being on the latest major version. And you must allocate that time every 9 months to update it.
Yeah, and if you run it with the warning flags and run your test suite, I was going to say, it should not take huge amounts of time if you have kept it up to date up to this point.
Yeah, and that's what's good about Django now, in the last few years, rather than, say, Django 5-6 years ago, where things were much more liable to change.
Yeah. Great. Awesome.
Well, okay.
As usual, you can leave comments at our website, djangochat.com, or on Twitter @chatdjango, and we'll see you all in the next episode.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye.